Today, I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth.
It occurred to us that younger Americans might not even remember Lou Gehrig, the Yankee great who thanked his fans even as he left baseball after being diagnosed with amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, or ALS, over 70 years ago. Today at ALS fundraising events, you might not even hear his name. That's okay with blogger Barbara Brenner. She writes, as sad as Gehrig's story is, the pictures of him, healthy, holding baseball bats, don't tell the story of ALS. How it attacks motor neurons, causes loss of muscle control, paralysis, death that usually comes within 2 to 5 years of diagnosis. How the cause is unknown, and there's only one drug that's been approved by the FDA to treat it. Barbara says there should be a new face for ALS. We have a suggestion. 25-year-old Corey Reach of Piedmont, California. He was diagnosed just after his 21st birthday. His dad, Ted, is on the board of the ALS Therapy Development Institute here in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Together, they've raised $2 million for ALS research, which, as we'll hear, lags behind other diseases in funding. They were in town for a fundraiser at TDI and came to our studios. Now, Corey is sometimes difficult to understand, and I anticipated a difficult conversation. After all, he's been given what amounts to a death sentence. But as you'll hear, he and his dad refused to see it that way. They told me to ask anything, and they made it easy. Ted Reach, Dad, welcome.
Thank you, Robin. Great to be here.
And sitting next to me, you of the unbelievably shining face, Corey Reach, welcome to you as well.
I shaved today, yeah.
You shaved today, that's why. Well, so first of all, 25, ALS.
Yeah.
How you doing?
I'm doing very well. For having such a very difficult diagnosis, I'm one of the lucky patients with ALS. I have a very slow progressing form of the disease.
Slow progressing. You say you're one of the lucky ones because
right.
you were diagnosed at 21.
Over 4 years ago now.
Right. And you know what the stats are. You know what
absolutely. Yeah. I've had friends who have been diagnosed after me who have already died.
Oh.
So the fact that over four years later that I can still walk around and communicate without a communication or device or use a wheelchair full time is amazing.
You don't have to use a communication device. You use a wheelchair some because...
Occasionally, yes.
Well, I mean, because you have work to do. You are a tennis coach.
I am. It makes it easier to get around the courts and... or give tips.
You can whip around the wheelchair. So we understand a tennis coach at your former high school, Piedmont High.
My former high school, yeah.
Back in Piedmont, California. I'm wondering, Dad, if the fact that Corey is an assistant tennis coach, if he is actively involved as he is with you, does that have something to do with how well he's doing? What do doctors tell you?
I don't think anybody knows.
That's the thing about ALS. They don't know very much about it, do they? They don't know if it's genetic. Sometimes it is.
Right.
They don't know what causes it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And tell us what there is out there. There is one medication. What does that do?
Well, apparently it gives people maybe a month of a life.
A month extra.
Yes.
Oh.
But it's hard to tell.
It's hard to tell.
I've been taking it since I was diagnosed. We don't know if it's helping significantly in my case or doing absolutely nothing.
Right.
But they think, for the average person who lives, 3-4 years, maybe a month on their life.
A month extra. And what's the name of that medication?
Ryaltek.
And this gets to the heart of the matter with ALS. Ted, help me with this if I understand this correctly. Of course, we want ALS patients to, live longer. Of course we do. But there's another really important reason that they do that has to do with research.
Yes. There's this gap between the research done by college professors and drug companies. And at this point, there's really no connection. And so TDI attempts to span that gap to create medicine that they would then pass on to drug companies.
Well, let's be blunt about why there is that gap. I mean, drug companies are probably saying, why should we spend millions? And you're nodding your head, Corey. Why should we spend millions?
Right.
Yeah, if the patients aren't living long enough.
That's the main issue right now as we see it, that for every person diagnosed, which is every 90 minutes in the United States, another patient is dying. So our population is never increasing in size. We're always around 30,000 patients in the United States. So a major pharmaceutical does not see us as a profitable group.
Yeah. And with that in mind, what's your goal?
Our goal, definitely short term, is to have some more effective treatment or therapy, that will give patients not just a month, but maybe double their lifetime. You know, instead of 2 to 5 years, let's get 7 to 10 years. All of a sudden, the population of people with ALS goes from 30,000 to 60, 70,000, and drug companies might realize we are a profitable sector. You know, these major pharmaceutical, they do an amazing job at drug discovery when they're interested.
Yeah.
They can pour up to $1 billion a year into any one disease. And right now, ALS TDI is
maybe $10 million.
$10 million compared to $1 billion.
And this is, again, this is a TDI. This is the Therapy Development Institute in Cambridge,
right,
Massachusetts, which is working on this. But there's another practical problem here, which is that drug trials also take time. And you need patients who you can work with for a long time.
Yes.
You're nodding, yeah.
Already now, 4 years into the disease, even though I seem to be doing, I am doing better than most patients, I am disqualified from doing most drug studies.
Right, because you're too far along.
Because I'm too far along, on paper, 4 years, not allowed into studying. You know, most people who have had it 4 years are in hospice, which means you have less than a year left. You know, someone dying in their study doesn't help them.
Someone dying in the study doesn't help their study, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So everyone in the ALS community obviously is willing to do almost any study out there because, they know they have to.
So you're, ready and available to be a study subject.
Yes.
And know where to go with that. Corey, we find you quite remarkable in a lot of
Thank
ways.
You.
And one is, you're talking about something. And I don't know how you feel about this, but it's a necessary part of this conversation. I mean, you've already mentioned that you've had friends diagnosed since your diagnosis. You're nodding. They've died. I mean, death is a part of the conversation about ALS.
It can't not be part of it.
How do you handle that?
I guess I'm pretty good at deflecting or ignoring it. I know it's going to happen, but, the end stage is not hopefully right around the corner, but it seems far off. But, once it comes up, you have to deal with it.
Yeah, the end stage. And so people know, the thing that ticks me off most about ALS is that, while your muscles atrophy and there's paralysis and difficulty breathing, your mind's going to be as sharp as it is right now, which is pretty sharp. But Ted, Dad, it sounds like you are, all of you, moms on the other side of the glass, focused on changing that outcome.
Right. Well, for us, we're trying to save our son.
Ted Reach and his 25-year-old son, Corey, who's been living with ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease for 4 years. Corey, Ted, and Mom Wendy live in Piedmont, California. They were in Boston to help raise funds for the ALS Therapy Development Institute, an organization dedicated solely to finding treatments for ALS. Corey's sister, Claire, now works there, so it's a family dedicated to changing what they say are false perceptions about ALS, like it's not a disease worth drug companies investing in, or it's an old people's disease. The average age of onset is 55, but Corey is in his 20s and first noticed symptoms as a Middlebury College student.
After my freshman year of college, I've interned in a dentist's office back home in the Oakland area.
You interned in a dentist office.
I thought I wanted to be a dentist, mm-hmm. and I one time got to sit and assist the dentist in a procedure, and nothing major, but just hand him instruments, and I was having difficulty handling the instruments, and it was something that at the time was, I must be nervous, I'm shaking a little bit, mm-hmm. or that's kind of weird, but you don't really think twice about it and move forward. And then the next summer, things weren't getting better. I couldn't really hold a cup of coffee or something without spilling it.
You're like 20.
And I was, 1920.
Yeah.
Softball was big, in most colleges in Middlebury as well. And I would go play, and I couldn't really run down to first as well as I could. And my friends were kind of giving me a little lip, because why aren't you hustling down to first base? Well, I thought I was. What do you mean? But, of course, at the time, these things, you don't think, man, I can't hold a cup of coffee. I must have ALS.
Did you even really know what ALS was?
No. After that junior year, I came back home for the summer and started the process of seeing doctors, and doctor referred me to the neurologist who did a series of tests, and there's no one test for ALS. You have to basically work backwards and rule out everything else.
Yeah. But Corey, even after you're diagnosed, you went back and finished college.
Right. When I finally got that final diagnosis from the ALS Forbes Norris Clinic, they said, that's the serious part really about the diagnosis, is you really have no idea how long it's going to be in each case. And they said, you should probably consider not going back to school. If this progresses quickly, you might be dead in 2 years, You might be in need of a full-time wheelchair in 6 months while you're at school.
Ted, did you have any hesitation to let him go?
Oh, no.
No, I was going back no matter what. And I knew that was hard on my parents, that if I would only live for 2 years, then I'd be spending one of them away from them.
Yeah. If you only live for 2 years, you'd spend one away. Yeah.
But I had made amazing friends. I loved my experience, and not finishing up would have been letting the disease win.
Would have been letting the disease win if you didn't go. Well, so you go, and these friends help you. The school had some personnel who, and we were talking about Middlebury, Vermont, who cleared snow
cold.
For you. It's cold, and they cleared snow for you to get to your classes.
Yes.
And, you're thinking maybe you used the illness on occasion to get a better grade.
It was, quite nice. It has its perks every once in a while.
And now here you are with this fight. How does it work, Ted? Do you have to believe that Corey's going to be the one to live long enough for the medicine that the people you're working with say that they're working as quickly as they can to find?
I think we ignore the future and live for the day. And Corey's very good about that. So in some ways we follow his lead.
Well, I understand there have been trips to Germany to sip beer.
Well, careful.
Belgium.
Oh, sorry. Well, Belgium. I'm sorry.
Belgium.
Sorry.
I may have a German last name, no, but I am much more a Belgian beerophile.
You've gone to Belgium how many times for beer tasting?
3 years in a row, and we go again in 3 or 4 weeks. I love it, and I'm very fortunate that I have the opportunity to do amazing things, and so we do, and we enjoy.
Yeah. What else is planned?
The tennis championship, that's a big deal for Corey.
To make it home next week.
Piedmont High?
Piedmont High, we're in the playoffs. We have never lost a league match in 12 years.
Yeah.
Next week, the playoffs start, so that's very exciting. You said earlier how important tennis is to me, and it is. It makes me get outside every day.
Get outside, yep.
People often say, man, if I had this diagnosis, I might just want to sit at home and do nothing. And it can be tempting, but when I have something I want to go do every day outside, it helps.
Yeah. Ted, Corey, don't listen for a second. Okay. What's it
Air
like
muffs.
To... That's right. What's it like to follow along behind him and see the wonderful wake he leaves?
Yeah, he's an impressive person. I have great admiration for him and his approach, and I think it's a good lesson for everyone.
On the other hand, he's in his mid-20s. And, you know, how do you wrestle with that when it's dark at night and we can see who he is, which is magnificent, but we can also see who he was going to be?
Right.
Well, I didn't have any job plan.
You didn't have any job plan?
No, man.
I had plans for him.
Oh, this is great. Oh, yeah, I don't have to go to work. Perfect.
That's part of how we get by. You know, yeah. We are constantly using humor.
Yeah. That's Ted and Corey Reach. For more information on the Therapy Development Institute, go to herenow.org. Corey, Ted, thanks so much for coming in. Thanks so much for all the work you're doing.
Yeah. Thank you, Robin.